Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to Hizb al-Tahrir's English podcast. Press release. Did Jews extend their reach into Egypt to eliminate scientists? This question exposes the reality of subservience and reveals the regime's inability to protect the country and its people. Translated. The assassination of the nuclear chemistry engineer in Alexandria was not a mere random criminal act, nor can it be easily dismissed as a quote-unquote personal dispute, as the Egyptian regime and its official media are trying to portray it. The timing, the nature of this specialization, the method of execution, and the surrounding political climate all compel us to ask the major questions that the regime avoids answering, and indeed fears even asking. The questions people are asking today are legitimate, even imperative. Has the hand of the Jews begun to reach into Egypt, the land of the Nile, to eliminate what remains of its scientific talent? Is it now the turn of the regime's political and military ally to offer up its scientific personnel as a sacrifice to maintain the relationship under a system of dependency? Is the regime truly unaware of who is behind this crime? Or is the most it can do a staged, closed-door investigation that avoids any mention of the truth? When a scientist, a researcher specializing in strategic fields, or an engineer possessing sensitive knowledge is assassinated, the first question that arises is, who benefits? Especially if we consider the realities in the region over the past decades. The Jewish entity has been the most implicated in assassination of Arab and Muslim scientists, from Iraq and Iran to Syria and Lebanon, targeting experts in physics, chemistry, communications, aviation, and missiles. Is it too far-fetched to expect it to extend its reach to Egypt, given the declared security alliance, ongoing intelligence coordination, and continuous communication? And is it far-fetched to expect the Jewish entity to continue working to strip the region's countries of any scientific or research capabilities that could form a basis of future military power? Whether the victim was currently working in his field or not, the question remains, why this hasty media assertion that his specialization was related to the incident, and why this insistence on turning the case into a quote-unquote personal feud before the investigation is complete? Isn't it standard practice for Egyptian security agencies to monopolize information and prevent the release of hypotheses before the investigation is finished? Why the rush this time? The instance of closing the door on any suspicion of political or foreign assassination reveals that the regime fears opening this door, because doing so would lead to a larger question. Why is it incapable of protecting its own scientists? And why can foreign powers operate within Egypt with impunity? It is impossible for the regime to be unaware that the Jewish entity is a sworn enemy of the Islamic Ummah, but the problem lies not in the regime's ignorance, but in the nature of its relationship with it. The relationship is not one of enmity, as Islam dictates, but rather one of cooperation, security sharing, and political coordination, in which preserving the regime takes precedence over preserving the country. Can a regime that coordinates daily with the occupying forces point the finger at them? Can a regime whose external legitimacy depends on the support of Western powers backing the Jewish entity accuse its quote-unquote common ally? Can a regime whose survival depends on the approval of America, the primary sponsor of the Jewish entity, even allow suspicions to be raised against them? The answer is obvious. Therefore, the investigation is always closed at the limits of a quote-unquote personal dispute or a quote-unquote passing incident or a quote-unquote mentally disturbed perpetrator. Those crimes should not be viewed as isolated incidents, but rather from the perspective of public security and the well-being of the Ummah. If the accused party politically and logically is the Jewish entity, then the religious obligation is not a form of commission of inquiry, but to protect the nation and repel the aggression. The question then becomes, does the regime possess the will or the capability to do so? Can it, while besieging the people of Gaza, allowing gas and electricity to reach the Jews, coordinating on security and border issues, and voting in their favor in international forums, claim it will hold them accountable? Islamic law, Sharia, requires the state to respond to aggression, considering it an attack on the entire Ummah. Allah Almighty says,
وقاتلوا في سبيل الله الذين يقاتلونكم.
Fight in the cause of Allah only against those who wage war against you. Surah Al-Baqarah, Ayah 190. But existing regimes do not operate according to this balance, but rather according to the balance of international politics and the interests of the major powers. Protecting the country and its scientists, repelling aggression, and deterring attacks are the duties of a truly sovereign state, not a regime lacking political will. Therefore, the most important question this incident raises is not who the killer is. Rather, can a regime politically, militarily, and economically subservient to America, the head of disbelief, kufr, and colonialism, truly protect Egypt, its capabilities, and its scholars? No matter how they try to portray it, this incident is not an ordinary incident, but rather an incident of fragility of real security in Egypt, of the country's exposure to hostile forces, and the regime's inability to protect its citizens, let alone the Ummah. O soldiers of the Kinana, the events unfolding in Egypt, the assassination of intellectuals and squandering of potential, and the opening of the country to enemies, reveal that the problem lies not with the people or the soldiers, but with the political leadership that has bound Egypt to relationships of subservience, rendering it vulnerable to its enemies. You know better than anyone that Islamic law has entrusted you with a great responsibility to uphold truth, prevent injustice, and protect the nation from its enemies. You know that the hand of the Jews has extended into the lands of the Muslims, killing, destroying, and corrupting. This would not have been possible had the Ummah possessed a state that upheld Allah's religion and defended the Muslims. We address you today with a sincere appeal, seeking only the pleasure of Allah, to fulfill your Shari'i duty to protect the country, to restrain the hands of the enemies, to prevent subservience to the West, and to support the Ummah's project to establish Islamic rule, which preserves lives, protects dignity, and restores the Ummah's authority under the Khilafah al-Rashida, rightly guided caliphate, following the methodology of the prophethood. وَمَا لَكُمْ لَا تُقَاتِلُونَ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ وَالْمُسْتَضْعَفِينَ مِنَ الرِّجَالِ وَالنِّسَاءِ وَالْوِلْدَانِ. And what is it with you? You do not fight in the cause of Allah and for oppressed men, women, and children. Surah An-Nisa, Ayah 75. Media Office of Hizb al-Tahrir in Wilayah, Egypt. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.